Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. We're going to chat with Dave Hall, who covers Canucks prospects and the Abbotsford Canucks for Canucks Army at 1 o'clock. But we got an open segment here, so get your texts, questions, comments, thoughts in as well. So we were talking in the whiteboard, right, about just kind of where the Canucks sit through 10 games, and you making the point, right, like a pretty good team that's just not playing well but is still good enough to pick up points without playing well, and what a dissatisfying experience that can be for Canucks fans. And of course, this is all like a huge part of the vibes this year exist in contrast to what we saw last year, right, where the vibes were off the charts. It was a dream season literally from night one and pretty much until they were eliminated against the Edmonton Oilers in game seven of the second round. And so I think there's a natural kind of almost like a vibes hangover from that, right, where it was going to be impossible to live up to the pleasure, the joy of watching that team for Canucks fans coming into this year. But I did want to, you know, because I've been, I think, fairly critical of this team so far through 10 games and even in that last segment. So I was kind of just, I wanted to check my own perspective on what's different, what's gone wrong for this team. Why don't they feel or look as good as they did at times last year? And I was poking around Natural Stat Trick, and what really struck me was through 10 games this year, their underlying 5-on-5 profile is almost eerily similar to what they did last season. Now, the full 82-game sample of last season, right? And that's an important distinction we can get to in a second. But based on just like the most basic measure of your underlying play, 5-on-5 shot attempt share, last year they finished 51.5% a control of shot attempts. That was 10th in the league. This year, they're just a hair under 52. They're 11th in the league. So almost no difference. Statistical dead heat. And even their defensive numbers, right? Because I think a lot of people would point to the defensive breakdowns as the biggest change from what we've seen last year. If you take the full 82-game sample from last year, and whether you're looking at shot attempts, shots, expected goals, scoring chances, take whatever metric you want, they're almost identical. Pretty much identical. In some cases, they're even slightly improved. In some cases, they're slightly worse. So you kind of dig under the hood of this team, and what we're seeing is remarkably similar to what they did over the full 82 games last season. Now, I'm not even saying, bringing this up to say, like, and therefore people are wrong to be dissatisfied or frustrated or anything, because I think there are reasons to want more than that. And there are some caveats too, right? Their defensive game spiked in a big way in the second half of the season.
Yep.
Right. They went like the last 35-ish games, they were legit one of the two or three best defensive teams in the league.
They went from good to
exceptional.
Boy. Yep.
And so I do think we're not just measuring, you know, in our perceptions of what we're seeing this year versus last year, we're not really thinking about October, November, December last year. We're thinking about the more recent games, which was, you know, February, March, April, where they were a defensive behemoth. They were fantastic defensively. So from that perspective, there has been a meaningful decline from what they did at their absolute peak last year to what they've done through 10 games. And, you know, of course, the goal isn't to maintain, right? It's to get better. They wanted to take a step forward. Right now, they haven't. They've just kind of maintained. But I think the difference is, and I said this in the first segment as well, it feels a lot closer to their floor than it does to their ceiling. And their floor looks like a kind of an above average defensive team right now. And so, okay, if that's your floor, that's a pretty decent spot to be 10 games into the season.
But what if it's mid-range?
What if it's like the fat part of the bell curve, you might say?
That's what I'm saying. Like, what if this is the average outcome, right? Because, you know, I don't see a lot of evidence that, like, what we've seen from the Canucks is a floor in terms of percentages and stuff, right? Like, they're... Mm-hmm. You know, despite Shelov's struggles to stop pucks, they're still getting, you know, 905 save percentage 5-on-5. They're still converting at a high clip, shots at a high rate. It's not like we've seen the Canucks go through like a week where they can't buy a bounce. or mm-hmm. where every puck is going in against them.
But I'm not so much talking about the percentages. I'm talking about when you think about like the fact that the eye test has looked as frustrating as it has, and we've seen so many moments like, you know, the Tyler Myers breakdown at the end, right? Or the odd man rushes against,
right,
that really stand out in your mind, and yet you dig into the numbers and it's not as if if you hadn't watched any games, right, and you were trying to dig into like what's wrong with the Canucks defensively, you'd be like, I don't know. What do you mean? They're like at a slightly above average defensive team, right? Like, it's hard to find the evidence of what we're seeing in the numbers. That doesn't mean it's not real. But I guess my point is that you can watch the games and see a lot of ways that they could be better defensively. And if they improve defensively, right, if they clean up those things that we're seeing when we watch the games, I think it's reasonable to expect those numbers to improve as well.
But this is why I'd focus on the percentages, Jamie, because as I like to say, hockey will fool you mm-hmm. if you let it, right? And, you know, so what's the biggest departure from last season? Well, last season, the Canucks got 922 goaltending at 5-on-5,
mm-hmm.
right? It was second best clip in the league, right? So all of a sudden, those breakdowns that you're noticing partly because they result in a goal against.
Yep, that's fair.
Right? Instead, it's saved, and you're like, yeah, but this team takes such good care to make sure Demko's only playing half the night, which, by the way, is true, right? But you notice a breakdown less when the result is a sick save than it is a goal against. It hurts mm-hmm. a lot less. You're not cursing out the guy you think is responsible. And then likewise, the team was shooting for much of the year, like 12%, right? They end up at something like 10.5%. So they're still down a solid 0.7 or whatever. So all of a sudden, those games that were becoming 3-1, and then the Canucks are in cruise control, and then they're playing their defensive game, and then they're getting out and attacking against the grain, and they're getting that opportunistic finish, and now it's 4-1, and now everyone feels like the Canucks absolutely pummeled their opponent, right? Those games, instead of it being 4-1, it's 2-1, and the other team's tied it, and, right? And, mm-hmm. and that's what that San Jose game felt like to me, more than anything else. It was just like, last year the Canucks would have got the other goal or got the goal to have a 2-goal lead, and then maybe it snowballs, maybe it doesn't. This team was so good at sort of always manufacturing that break, and those breaks just haven't happened. So the game that should be 3-1, now it's 2-2, the margins get finer, and everything just looks more discombobulated or frustrating or stilted, even though the club's playing fundamentally the same. And I don't think they are playing the same. Like, there is one, or there's a couple areas that I'd point out to you where I think it is materially different. One is, while the team's sort of ratio in terms of how many shots they're generating, how yep. many they're playing in higher event games overall.
But not as dramatically as you'd think.
No, but
it's really, like, it's marginal. It's pretty marginal.
We're talking, like, 4 extra shot attempts, though, per hour, both ways. Like, 4.5.
4 total.
4 total. 4.5 total.
That's marginal.
It's not, though, when you think about it in terms of league-wide rates, right? Like, mm-hmm. the rate at which the Canucks generated. So, for example, if we talk about shot attempts last season, right? The rate at which the Canucks generated shot attempts last season was 22nd in the NHL, okay? Mm-hmm. And the rate at which they surrendered them was 5th best in the NHL, or, you know, right at the bottom of the league. Well, if you go from, you know, 4.5 doesn't feel like a ton, but relative to the rest of the league, the Canucks are now generating shots 4 at a top 10 rate, and are outside the bottom 10
mm-hmm.
in terms of the rate at which they're permitting shot attempts against. So it's like you go from being one of the lowest event teams in hockey 5-on-5 and having all these percentages go your way to being a middling or like a relatively normal pace team, maybe even a higher than average pace team where the percentages aren't going your way. I mean, that introduces a lot more volatility into your outcomes. And so I think that's sort of partly what we're seeing too.
Now, this text comes in, and I think it's a really important point, right? And it's unsigned. It says, the problem is that those results are against bad competition mostly. They have similar underlying numbers, but against bad teams, yikes. That's absolutely a part of the conversation here, right? If you're doing the comparison that I'm doing, it's, yeah, they haven't played that many truly daunting teams. Obviously, you know, Carolina, New Jersey, Tampa's a pretty good team. Florida was missing Barkov and Kachuk, but a lot of their schedule has been against softer teams so far. So that's something to keep in mind, important context to keep in mind. And I guess the other thing is, you know, as you said, look, there is a higher pace environment that they're playing in, but the flip side of the defensive numbers don't look that much different. And people are also texting in, you know, about their rush numbers that Kevin Woodley has access to. And I don't think that's a surprise, right? That they're a lot poorer.
Yes.
My point is that it's not showing up in things like scoring chances necessarily, but the clear sight analytics data that Woodley has access to is obviously really important here as well. But as much as you can look at it as a positive that their numbers look good or look similar defensively to last year, their offensive numbers, as I say, would be a marginal increase, right? And so much effort and so much time was spent on reshaping how this team performs offensively. It hasn't dramatically improved. It's pretty similar, again, based just on shot attempts, scoring chances, high danger chances, all of those things, to what we saw through 82 games last year. Again, I think you can put a positive spin on that. You can say, hey, and people are texting in, you know, the chemistry looks off, all of that. They're trying to integrate a bunch of new players. They're trying to integrate a new system. But you would like, I think you would have liked to see more of an improvement offensively by this stage, especially against the competition they've played based on what they did last year, than we've seen so far from this team, Dranser.
Yeah, for sure. And for what it's worth, if you're looking over, I just pulled this up by request, but this is sort of the Sport Logic comparison. So I haven't given you an opportunity to look this over. So
that's
fine. Deeply unfair of me, but you'll forgive me, I'm sure. So the Canucks were fifth in the NHL by goals against, right? Last season. And this year, it's actually, they're down at 20th at this point. I'm guessing that's rates, but expected goals wise, they've gone to, oh my goodness, they've really fallen off. They were fifth last season, they're 23rd in the early going. And yeah, I mean, it does look like they're just softer across the board. Like, their ranks by almost every category, with the exception of permitting offensive zone passes, was top 10. And this year, it really, this here, it has fallen off almost everywhere else, except that they're still playing in relatively low event defensive environments.
So that's interesting, because I guess that's a different stat data set than Natural Stat Trick, because Natural Stat Trick has them fifth best expected goals against per 60 at 5-on-5 this year.
Oh, well, for sure. This would be the custom Sport Logic one.
So that's very interesting, right? Yeah.
Be careful with expected goals, man. Especially
sure,
the publicly listed.
But that data is obviously picking up something which I think a lot of fans would say matches the eye test more.
For sure.
Right? Than the fifth best number that we're getting from Natural Stat Trick. So I think that's absolutely fair to bring up. Now, you don't always want to just like, it's one of those things with stats where you don't always just want to throw out what doesn't match your eye test, because it's like, well, then why are you even looking at them if you're just throwing out anything that doesn't match what you already thought was the case? But it's an interesting counterweight too to the publicly available data.
For what it's worth, the area where they seem to have fallen off the most is slot shots and inner slot shots. Right, that's where the guts of the ice, as Rick Tocchet would put it. That seems to be where they've fallen off the most. What's sort of interesting is the club's offensive game has actually improved mildly, but it's more in the Sport Logic data, but it's more than offset at this point by the defensive fall off. So this is where you sort of get to that balance that can be tricky, right? This team is trying to evolve. I think they were right to try to evolve, and there have been signs on occasion that there's been progress made, but I do think we're now starting to see, with the way that teams are attacking the Canucks off the rush, some of the limitations of attempting to open it up and playing a less controlled, composed game in terms of what protection you're able to offer your slower defensemen in terms of teams attacking against you. And I still sort of wonder if this team is too ill-fitting thoughts mashed together in terms of having this defensive group on the back end that might be better suited to playing the way that the Canucks played last season, and a forward group that's maybe better suited to getting out and playing a little more run and gun, a little more open up, with obviously sort of the drawback of that being that when you loosen the reins a bit, you know, you're going to start to surrender a little bit more the other way. That's the nature of hockey, where you're always defending and attacking at all moments on the ice, whether you have the puck or not.
Somebody else texted in, I've lost it here because I think they've texted in since then as well, but like, one of the key differences beyond the team level statistical comparisons this year to last year is that last year they had four superstar players producing like superstars, right? Certainly before, you know, February 1st, in the case of Elias Pettersson. And so that was a whole, that's a huge part of the theory of this team, right? Is that, okay, the shot attempt process might not ever look as elite as it does for Carolina or Edmonton or, you know, the teams that are perennially at the top of the league, but the status and the presence of Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and JT Miller and Thatcher Demko should help them bridge the gap from, you know, a 10th place in terms of shot attempts to what those Stanley Cup contender teams are doing at the very top of the table. And again, that outside of Quinn Hughes, that just really has not been present this year. And if this team is going to make the jump from, you know, the 9th or 10th best team in hockey to a true Stanley Cup contender, yeah, there's things about the defense that have to get better and there's things about the process that have to get better, but that has to be present as well.
I'll let you look over this data at the break, Jamie, but the...
Eh.
I did my work.
That's fine.
What? Honestly, I'm a little more disturbed having pulled it up than I thought I would be.
That's
right?
Fantastic.
Because I often lean on the public metrics, sort of heavily and believe heavily in like shot attempts, just like capturing most of it anyway. Mm-hmm. But their profile, once you're accounting for things like inner slot shots and you know, testing it in this manner, is way softer than I expected, and has fallen off way more from last season than I would have thought. Like top 10 by expected goal differential, mm-hmm, last season, down at 23rd per Sportlogic's data through the first 10 games of this year. I mean, that is a massive departure. Like, that is a completely different world that this team is living in terms of the quality of their 5-on-5 game than what the public metrics are sort of capturing, or what we saw from this club last year. Like, they've actually... So this comes back to the floor conversation. Like, this absolutely might not be their floor. I'm still sort of buoyed or hopeful, because I think a lot of the small things that this team is regularly messing up, they have the capacity to fix,
yeah,
the coaching to fix, the personnel to fix. Maybe you need another blue liner, but those are things you'll work through.
Well, they have the management wherewithal to fix that, right?
Totally.
And the mindset to fix that.
The desire,
mm-hmm,
the aggressiveness to fix that. So, you know, I just sort of look at this and think, okay, a lot of this is probably going to sort itself out a little or a lot, but you know, their first 10 games, I do think there's enough that's like meaningfully troubling. And their 5-on-5 form, I think, has fallen off perhaps more than the public metrics.
Yeah, that's fair. That's interesting.
Honestly, more than even I've sort of accounted for.
Well, I'm glad I could prompt you to pull those up and see what was going on there.
Yikes. It ain't good, Jamie.
And that does, like, again, that's, I was surprised, right? Like, I wasn't going into this segment being like, I'm going to prove everyone wrong. The Canucks have been great defensively. I was surprised to see how little drop-off there had been based on the public numbers from last year. And I think what you're pulling up, it does match the eye test a lot closer, right? Like, think about how many really, really good saves off high danger chances Kevin Lankinen's had to make this
year. Even against, like, Chicago. And even against San Jose. Like, that Granlund chance where where off the rush, like, the defense just completely abandoned him, right? Like, even DT and Shorty on the call, they were like, I think Granlund was surprised to have that much space alone in front. Well, and the Zetterlin breakdown was, like, appalling,
mm-hmm,
like, unconscionable. There's no way Rick Tocchet had a fun flight to Southern California watching that tape. 0% chance.
All right, we got a few more minutes here before we take a break, and then Dave Hall will join us in the next segment. I did just want to pass this along from a friend of the show, I guess, frenemy of the show, Rick Dhaliwal, who tweeted a little bit earlier, good progress with Thatcher Demko. He is in the last stage of hurdles that need to be cleared before he can return to practice. Still no timetable, but very good progress being made. That's from Rick Dhaliwal. And obviously he begins the tweet with good progress with Thatcher Demko, but then the middle part is kind of, and it's like, well, what exactly does that mean, right? Like, it's not, he's on track to return to practice this week, or he's going to return to practice this week. He's in the last stage of hurdles that need to be cleared before he can return to practice.
Yeah, do you see Demko? There was like a Hockey News, an Intrepid Hockey News affiliated reporter in San Jose who sort of captured some of Demko's routine with Marco Terenius on the ice at San Jose. And I was sort of looking at this and thought, A, you know, good for this out of market reporter, mm-hmm, understanding that there's access to this, but also B, the lack of information around this has turned Demko into like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster or something, where it's like, Demko spotting, you know, and it's just like, What are we doing here, guys?
We need to get ace photographer Josh Elliott Wolf on the case. Get a grainy, out-of-focus video.
I mean, Demko was obviously so transparent with what he dealt with at the opening of training camp, which made up for the fact that, you know, he'd had a surgery in the offseason that the club hadn't announced, and that all of this had sort of been under wraps for months and months. And then whatever happened since then, right, whether it was a setback or whether progress was slow, like, there's been so little information that, you know, I honestly think it's become a story with its own level of life, you know, and I don't know that a report like this from Rick necessarily answers the questions that we and Canucks fans all reasonably have about exactly what sort of the status is. It's not different from the fact that, you know, Elias Pettersson hasn't been willing to shed any insight into how he's thinking about his form.
Mm-hmm.
And that that sort of creates a vacuum that gets filled with panic, innuendo, you know, speculation, mystery, right? And it's just like, I don't know, in every respect, it feels like this organization is making mountains out of molehills by simply not communicating what's going on with some of their star level players in a timely manner or with a manner that sort of lends credibility to the club's updates.
Yeah, and I guess with Thatcher Demko, I mean, I'm not sure how much the report from Rick kind of changes where I was already at.
It's really good progress.
Which is when
great progress.
When he gets on the ice with the team, like, that'll be the first real tangible step that we've seen since training camp.
I hope very good progress has been made. Hopefully he gets back into more free-flowing situations with his teammates soon, and hopefully he gets back into the crease shortly, because we all just want to see Thatcher Demko stopping pucks.
Yeah, absolutely. Todd has depressed takes, says, yeah, but the last stage of hurdles is able to play hockey again. That's an important one. That's an important one he's going to have to clear before he gets on the ice. Well, who knows what those last hurdles are? We'll see. We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll, you know, get a meaningful update on exactly what's happened since we heard from Demko in mid-September, because, you know, I do think that this has now taken an awfully long time without ready progress being made. And certainly I think Canucks fans would love to have an understanding of exactly why the delay over sort of the timeline that we, not that there was ever a timeline, but that, you know, I think people would have reasonably anticipated, which wasn't 2 months out before Demko practices again, when the club sort of reported for training camp.
Speaking of practice, the Canucks are going to practice in just a matter of minutes down in Southern California, so we'll have any updates from Canucks practice for you, but also very pleased to be chatting from Canucks Army with Dave Hall next. He covers the Abbotsford Canucks for Canucks Army, and there's lots going on down there, of course, Lekkomäki, but also Aturatu and some other interesting stories, so we'll get into that with Dave Hall. Keep your texts coming in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650. Is this house music, Dom?
Yes, it is. It's Big Room.
Don't know what that means, but glad.
We're calling it Uber Mondays.
Is it called Big Room?
Because Uber Mondays.
Big Room is in a house?
It's just the genre, the subgenre.
So it's not the name of the song. This is a subgenre.
Of house called music. Big Room.
Do all subgenres of house music have, like, house-themed names?
No.
Basement? Powder Room?
I actually do think there's basement house.
I mean, it makes sense. The house is the overarching genre. Each of the rooms in the house, a different subgenre.
Don't all of them usually include the word house?
Great TV show, by the way.
Is that where house music started?
No.
Isn't it usually like Diva House?
Yeah,
Diva House,
deep,
yeah.
There's Deep House, Tech House.
Big Room.
Big Room House. Love a Big Room House.
Dom House.
Dom House.
Dom House.
All right.
Canucks House.
We do have a guest waiting.
Yes. Yep. So let's stop that. Canucks Talk, we're back. It's brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As mentioned, right now, we're very pleased to be joined from Canucks Army. He covers the Abbotsford Canucks. He is Dave Hall. Dave, thanks very much for doing this. Apologies for forcing you to wait on the line through that. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well, and happy to have you on because, man, there's a lot going on with the Abbotsford Canucks right now. And I think top of mind for Canucks fans will be Jonathan Lekkomäki's offensive outburst, couple of goals yesterday, now 4 in 6 games. And I mean, the thing that really jumps off the stat page is the shots on goal total as well. Just tell us a little bit about what you're seeing from Lekkomäki these days in Abbotsford.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm seeing. It's just shots, shots, shots. You know, basically any chance he's getting right now, he's just putting rubber on net. You know, he had his debut on October 25th, and in that span, he leads, not only leads, but dominates the AHL in shots with 34. And now, in general, he's just one shot shy of the league lead. So, yeah, whether it's on power play or at even strength, he's taking shots whenever he can. Sometimes to his demise, you know, there are times that you kind of wish that he'd wait just maybe a touch second further, just to, you know, maybe let some traffic build up a little bit. But, yeah, overall, you love to see it. That's what we're hoping for in his debut with Abbotsford, and so far he's come as advertised.
Dave, how much of the offense is coming on the power play? How much of it is at 5-on-5?
Yeah, I believe it's split right down the middle. All three of his four goals are on the power play. So, you know, there's no way to sugarcoat it. He's definitely thriving on the power play. He's getting a lot of shots on there, and him and Ratu, and now that Christian Relanen is back, they've been working that top umbrella like fantastically. So yeah, he's definitely doing a lot on the power play, but even at 5-on-5, him and Atu Ratu, regardless of who their, you know, insert name here winger is, they've just been dominating at 5-on-5. Not so much on the stats. I know that his, you know, at Lekkomäki's specifically plus minus isn't fantastic right now, but overall they've been doing fantastic, whether it's at even strength or power play.
And one thing we always have to ask, because we've seen it a few times. I mean, we've seen it with Daniel Sprong even this season. We obviously saw it with Kuzmenko a while ago. As dynamic as you might be offensively, right, you have to be able to play a complete game if you're going to get regular minutes for Rick Tocchet. Where has Lekkomäki's sort of overall two-way game been, you know, in his first few AHL games this season?
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to make too, especially for not only do you need to play two-way hockey in general, but for, you know, if you want to play for Tocchet, I think that's the big question. And yeah, I mean, like, do I think he's out there being, you know, a two-way anomaly and playing, you know, incredible defense? No. At the same time, I don't think it has been as bad as, you know, as minus five may, you know, I don't think it's quite as indicative as his stats may show. I think just as a team right now, their defensive metrics just aren't very, like, aren't great. You know, for example, Jet Wu and Guillaume Brisebois as a unit are a combined minus 13, I believe, right now. So I just think overall as a defensive unit, they're not playing all that sound, and they're also not, although, you know, Lekkomäki's finally got some offense going, as a team, they haven't been scoring a lot of goals. I think they're shooting around an 8% shooting percentage right now. So, you know, they're shooting a ton, just not scoring a ton. So, but to focus a little more on Lekkomäki, I don't think he's been fantastic on the two-way, but I also don't think he's been that bad. It's kind of hard to gauge, because with a player like Lekkomäki, it's, you know, that's not what he's there for. And so while you try to hyper, you know, focus on how his defensive play has been, it's also, you kind of give a little bit of wiggle room, just in the sense that you know that he's there to take 34 shots in 6 games and to hopefully score you some goals, right? So I do think there's a little bit of grace, but I think his overall, whether it's been engagement in the corners or his forecheck, I think he's been a little bit better than maybe his minus five stat line might show.
Yeah, and one of the other question marks, I think, with his game was, right, you know, we all know the shot is there, the talent off the rush, right? He has that game breaking type of ability, but I think there were some questions about, okay, when the play is in the offensive zone on the cycle, how is he contributing, how is he getting to the inside in those situations, you know, his work as a playmaker as well. What are you seeing from that aspect of Lekkomäki's game?
Totally. You know, I don't know if I've seen so much of him going inside the middle, which I just, you know, I've watched enough of him, his game, and while I did like I like that he did a little more last year. I'm still not fully convinced that that's just part of his game. What I can say is that he's going in the corners and he's digging for pucks. He's going behind the goal line. He's trying to get that puck. And when he does get it, he's made a few dishes specifically to Atu Ratu that could have connected for a few more assists on the stat line. So I've actually been quite impressed with his ability to play make. Again, I'm not so sure that I'm thrilled about his ability to go through the middle. But overall, in the corners and below the goal line, I've actually been quite happy with at least his engagement. You know, he's obviously not the biggest guy, and he's not out there throwing his body, but he's at least getting into the battles and doing what he can to win those battles. So,
Dave, one thing that, you know, I remember noticing at training camp and commenting on, and we may have even talked about it, was, you know, in terms of going down low, right, there's a certain, like, level of core strength and sort of mechanics on your edges that sort of allow, for example, like Nils Höglander and Connor Garland as prime examples on the Canucks to control the puck and maybe punch above their weight in terms of winning 50-50 battles along the wall. And it looked to me like that was an area where Lekkerimäki was going to have to work on and grow, certainly to get to the level that players like Höglander and Garland are at, which, by the way, that's a very high standard. Those guys are elite at some of those cutback things. So what are you seeing from Lekkerimäki in terms of his work on the wall, his ability to protect the puck in those battles?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, Garland and Höglander are definitely two, you know, upper echelon names to kind of go off of. But, you know, and we're also talking about the difference between the American League and the NHL. So, you know, there also is a difference there. Like I said, I've been happy with his ability to, like, with his engagement. You know, I'm happy that he's at least willing to get in there and grind for pucks. And, you know, on 50-50 battles, I don't want to say he's winning, you know, 55% of them, but I think he's definitely coming out with a couple wins. I just don't know. I don't know if I'm convinced that is going to be a part of his game. You know, like, I just don't know. He is a buzzsaw, and he's willing to be engaged, and you know, the workload is definitely there, or the work rate rather. I just, you know, in terms of the battles at the American League, he's been fine. I'll say that he's been fine. I don't think he's been amazing or poor. I just, you know, when I try to picture him, envision him doing that at the NHL level, I think there's still work to be done. And that's why, for me, I still think the best place for him, and maybe you'll get here eventually, and so I apologize if I answer your question, but I don't know if I'm there yet on him fully being called up, because I do still think there's work to be done in all the areas other than him shooting that puck.
Well, and one of the other players who already has some NHL experience this year, his name has come up a couple of times, of course, playing with Lekkerimäki, is Atu Ratu. And, you know, of course, starts the season with the Canucks, goes down to Abbotsford, and 7 points in 8 games. You know, obviously he finished the season really strong last year, but that was playing on the wing. Now he's back at center. How does he look, you know, not just his production and everything, but specifically playing the role of center for this team right now?
Well, and the funny thing is Nils Åman comes down last night and plays, so Atu Ratu moves to the wing, and he actually has moved to the wing on another game as well. But to be honest, he's, now, each and every game, there's just, you can just tell when Atu Ratu is on the ice, because he just stands out well above most of the other players on the ice. Like, whether he's producing points, like, he has 7 points now, but let's keep in mind that 5 of those came in the last 2 games. So, you know, he hasn't always been putting up the points a ton this year, but even when he's not, he's just standing out well above the pack. And, you know, he's playing upwards of 22 minutes average, I believe, right now. He's playing top line center, top line power play, and, you know, when the 2-minute mark strikes for the penalty kill, he's out there taking the faceoffs. I believe he's hovering around the 60% faceoff rate right now. So he's playing the part. And, you know, I have to give credit when credit is due, because I was pretty steadfast last year on him needing to be in Abbotsford for one more year, just because I just didn't know. I wasn't convinced that the skating and just the overall dynamic play was there, but he's looked like a much different, you know, he obviously worked his butt off in the summer, and he looked like a much stronger player. Obviously the skating isn't nearly, you know, it's nowhere near elite. And I just, you know, at this point, I think it's safe to say that it won't be, but I think it's now passable to the point where I think he's definitely on the fringe of being a call up at any point, you know, when the time strikes.
Dave, I want to ask you, you mentioned the Wu Guillaume Brisebois pair has struggled, and despite not getting, you know, a look of any material kind at
preseason, like in the preseason, you know, I asking around internally, I keep getting the sense that the organization's leaving the light on for Guillaume Brisebois, that more than anything, that was about injury management than it was about how the organization kind of views him as a potential NHL level contributor down the line. How do you square that sort of with his struggles here? Does he look like he could in any way be capable of handling a regular NHL shift at the moment?
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm there for NHL moment or NHL shift rather. I will say that, you know, he's a minus nine and that just looks terrible. And, you know, he definitely isn't fantastic out there defensively. But I also think he's at the very least, he's a nice AHL veteran presence for the younger guys. And I actually, you know, he's been okay. At this point, I don't know if I'm there. I think there's some other options. You know, if you're gonna think call up, I think there's definitely some options above him in the pecking order.
Elias Pettersson, I should say, excuse me, the defenseman Elias Pettersson, of course, another top prospect in Abbotsford, first full season for the Abbotsford Canucks. What's your early sense of how his game is developing there?
Yeah, I love this kid. You know, he's not that kind of player that's, you know, he doesn't give me the sexy clips.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not out there putting up those points. But, boy, is he solid. He comes in as a 20-year-old defenseman. He co-leads this team with a +5. And, you know, in terms of U24 skaters, I believe he's second with a plus-minus or plus-5 rating. He's playing second pair of minutes and penalty killing minutes. And so he's just overall solid. You know, like I said, he's not doing anything super fancy out there. But he's just... in the defensive zone, he's just playing the body. He's making life a nightmare for his opponents. He has a good first pass. And just overall, you know, I said, look, Aramaki's coming in and as expected. Elias Pettersson, you know, meat and potatoes, he's come as advertised. He's just a super solid defenseman. There's not much more to be said than just super solid.
So you mentioned the overall defensive and goal prevention thing, state of things in Abbotsford, right? It's not exactly going well from that perspective. And goaltending depth, I think a pretty front burner issue for Canucks fans right now. Obviously, Lankinen has been exceptional at the NHL level, but big questions about Shelovs. Don't know when Demko is going to be healthy. And then you look down at the AHL level and both Jiří Patera and Nikita Tolopilo, save percentages under 900. How much of that is the goal? How much of that is the defensive environment in front of them for the Abbotsford right now?
I think it's just a combination. You know, one thing about the AHL that, you know, isn't great that you kind of have to take into perspective when you're talking about stats, especially for goalies, is they're playing a ton of games. You know, for Abbotsford Canucks, they just played 4 games in 6 nights. And, you know, Patera, who had a major disaster in the last 10 minutes of the game last night. They're up 4-1. They end up losing 6-4 with an empty net goal. Patera just came off of playing back-to-back nights. He was playing back-to-back nights and then played 3 games in 4 nights, right? So, you know, they're playing a ton. But the goaltending specifically has been one of those double-headed monsters all season. At one point, Tolopilo was 3-0, was phenomenal. You know, in two of the wins, he was the, you know, the story of the game. And then he comes in on a back-to-back and lets in 4 goals on 11 shots, gets the hook. And then Patera, who had an extremely weak start, comes in and he lets in 2 goals in 10 periods before the big breakdown last night. So overall, it's kind of a mixed bag and you don't really know what to expect on a night-to-night basis. But I think just overall, yeah, I think it's the defense, and I think that's kind of a credit to having 2 20-year-old defensemen on your roster. I think it's a credit to having, you know, Guillaume Brisebois, who's only played a handful of games in the past year or so. You know, I think, and then there's some new names, you know, Mark Friedman coming in and out, and so there's just, I think it's just a testament to, you know, just a very inconsistent environment right now overall in the defensive core. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Sometimes the goals they let in are a little weak, but at the same time, there's just a lot of breakdowns that seem to be happening. So,
Dave, from Canucks practice in Anaheim, my athletic colleague Harmon Dial has just tweeted that Arshdeep Bains is centering a prospective fourth line with Niels Hoglander and Daniel Sprong. As a close Abbotsford observer, have you seen Bains play any center here?
No, that's a big shock to me.
Yep. Okay. Well, I think we'll... I think maybe leave the light on for Atu Ratu,
yes,
making his way to Southern California before the end of the night.
Yeah, I think that would be a good. But hey, if he doesn't, As much as you don't want to see R.C. Baines get sent down, a top line of Lekkerimäki, R.C. Baines, and Atu Ratu is quite the line in the AHL, mm-hmm. I'll say that much.
Yeah, sounds fun. I'd definitely tune in for that, Dave. Thank you. Hey, Dave, thank you so much. We appreciate you joining us today.
No, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. That is Dave Hall, who covers the Abbotsford Canucks for Canucks Army, weighing in on some of the very interesting storylines happening with the Abbotsford Canucks right now. Of course, foremost among them, Lekkerimäki lighting the lamp a bunch in recent games. And yeah, as we were conducting that interview with Dave Hall, your colleague from The Athletic, Harmon Dial, tweeting the lines from practice in Anaheim. And it is, I'll run through them here because, as you mentioned, interesting what Rick Tocchet has rolled out in Anaheim on a practice day for the Canucks. So JT Miller still skating with Jake DeBrusk and Brock Besser. Pew Suter remains with Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland. The third line, of course, of Teddy Bluger, Dan Heinen, and Kiefer Sherwood stays together. And then, as you said, Arshdi Baines lining up down the middle between Nils Höglander and Daniel Sprong on the fourth line. Interesting that Harm still has Dakota Joshua rotating in as an extra. And then on the blue line, it's Hughes and Hronek, it's Soucy and Myers, and then it's Brännström and Vincent Desharnais as a pairing, along with Derek Forbort and Noah Juulsen. So interesting that, look, we'll see if it matches what they line what they run out in the game tomorrow, but that you're seeing a rotation of guys come in and out of the lineup on the third pair, but Brännström is not one of the guys going out. He is a mainstay there right now, whether it's on the left side or the right side, as they rotate guys in between Desharnais, Forbort, and Juulsen on the right side. And yeah, probably the big piece of news there, one, Dakota Joshua still skating as an extra, perhaps suggesting he's not going to be in the lineup against Anaheim tomorrow, although we'll see. Sounds, you know, based on what we've heard from Rick Tocchet, it could even be a game time type of thing for Dakota Joshua. And then, as you said, with Arshdi Baines playing at center at this practice, seems pretty likely that Atu Ratu, who's performed well, we just heard from Dave Hall, he's standing out, he's doing a lot of things really well, even if it doesn't lead to points, but he also has 5 points in his last two games. Seems pretty likely like Atu Ratu could be back up with the team in the very near future here.
Yeah, they're going to need a center. They're going to need a center.
Mm-hmm. Because the one possibility was Suter goes back to fourth line center, and then either Baines or Joshua is playing up the lineup, right? If you're not seeing that, strongly suggests that they're going to have to call up a center to play there.
Well, I'll be curious, too. I mean, one thing about waving him on, right, it doesn't preclude you from bringing him back. And
nope.
Now his waiver clock is reset,
mm-hmm.
you know, just as Brännström's is about to expire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that you can continue to utilize that status to toll cap space. So that could be also part of the logic here. Maybe it's Amon, maybe it's Ratu, but you'd think the Canucks would play
well,
with
either
the fourth center.
Either guy, right? Because if you're bringing somebody up and you're activating Joshua, then you need to send somebody down. And that would almost certainly be Baines, who's waiver exempt, right? But either guy you bring up, whether it's Nils Amon for 30 days after his waiver exempt clock has started, or Atu Ratu, you're able to do the Abbotsford shuffle thing that we've seen them do with Baines and Brännström. So they'll have a choice there, whether it is Atu Ratu, whether they do bring Nils Amon right back up. But it looks like there's going to be an opening on the fourth line at center for the Canucks against Anaheim tomorrow. What do you make of, at least at practice, Desharnais getting back in on the third pair, Brännström staying in, Forbort looking like he could be an extra tomorrow against Anaheim?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're probably just trying to find a fit that works. Honestly, I think what I'm a little bit more surprised by at this point, Jamie, is that they haven't been experimenting a little more with the second pair.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, how long till we see Myers, Brännström?
I don't know. I mean, you're going to run that out as your second pair, your second highest minutes pair?
I would be thinking strongly about it. Yeah, the Myers-Soucy, it's just not working.
It's not working. But I would almost,
I
would almost try Brännström on the right side with Soucy before I would go Brännström-Myers.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, there's an element to which that makes sense to me simply because Myers, at least among the non-Brännström, non-Hughes, non-Hronek defenders, gives you your best shot of having a guy who can help you move the puck.
Yep.
It's not always pretty. Sometimes
nope.
He tries to do too much, right? We all know the sort of Myers experience. Myers is best off when he can play a little bit more of a restrained game. And you know, when he's filling that role, we've seen him be effective. But, yeah, I mean, in some, like, it, Brännström's minutes are trending this way anyway, so it feels like only a matter of time if things continue to progress the way that they have to this point. But yeah, I mean, at some point, trying Brännström up lineup feels like something you kind of have
to explore. Yeah, there's no clean fit, but if it keeps looking like this, I mean, you're going to have to think about something.
Myers-Forbert.
Yeah, Myers-Forbert
fine to me.
Would be the other option. Like, it's,
but I don't have a problem with that as a third pair.
As a third pair?
Yeah.
As a second pair. So you're saying if it's Susie Brännström, try that out. And then, yeah, Forbert-Myers, I think would be a totally decent third pair.
I think you came up with the better idea.
That's
what I'm saying. I'm pivoting. I'm like completely abandoning my horse midstream.
Yeah, Brännström-Myers as your second pair makes me very, very nervous. Very nervous. But
fair enough.
Forbert-Myers as your third pair, it's like, okay, you can work with that. You can very, very much work with that. It's just a question of then what your second pair looks like after that. All right, we'll take a break here. Keep sending your texts in, 650-650. We can react a little bit more to the lineup news and continue taking your texts as well. So send your questions in. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next year. Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here, live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. We got an open segment to wrap things up here on the show today. So we can get into some of your texts. We do have this update from Harmon Dial down at practice in Anaheim, who says Derek Forbort got shaken up during a drill and has left practice early, favoring his leg. So already per Harm, as they rolled out the defense pairs, he was on kind of the extra pair with Noah Juulsen. But Derek Forbort leaving Canucks practice early. We'll see. We probably won't hear from Rick Tocchet before we're off the air, but we'll see if Rick Tocchet has an update of any sort on Derek Forbort. And not ideal. One game back, your next practice, you're leaving early. But again, we'll see. We'll see what the status of Derek Forbort is when we hear from Rick Tocchet after practice today. I did want to read this, by the way, Drancer. This text that came in from Dave from the WAC, who says, just listening to the whiteboard, and while I'm normally a Drance stan, calling pieces of chocolate slices is certifiably bizarre. That one got a lot of pushback early in the show. Slices of chocolate.
Am I so out of touch? No, it's the children who are wrong.
I mean, I call almost everything slices, to be totally honest.
Like
with
what?
You.
Like what else?
Like,
what else, Thomas?
My wife's eating an ice cream sandwich. Can I have a slice of that?
Instead of a bite?
Yeah.
That's diabolical.
Yeah, that is weird. You're not expecting her to like get out a knife and slice it off. That's what a slice is.
Do you mind if I have a slice of popcorn?
That's
No, this is a bit. You're lying.
No,
you're lying.
I'll say it for everything.
A slice of popcorn.
A little slice of popcorn.
That's out of control.
I don't think it's a big deal.
That's completely nonsensical.
It's fine.
It's a massive deal.
It's not. It's just a saying, like a slice. It's just like a little piece of chocolate. Like a slice of fruit and nut.
Nothing like a good slice of fruit and nut. Just carve me one off the block there, like a prime rib station at a wedding.
The greatest of all time chocolate bar, fruit and nut.
Have a couple slices of that?
Internationally recognized.
Did you give those out on Halloween?
I didn't. I don't live in a place where kids can trick or treat.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Classic single guy.
Yeah, classic single life.
No, like
living in the bachelor apartments where no one goes to trick or treat.
No, I live on like a rooftop. You need like key card access. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like a condo.
No, it's more like a rooftop.
It's more of a slice of a home.
It's more like a slice of place.
It's a little slice of a home. A
little slice of heaven, people say. You can slice heaven and no one bats an eye.
Uh-huh.
But the moment you slice popcorn or, what was I saying, chocolate, people are like, no.
Ice cream sandwiches.
Yeah. How dare you?
All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we
just
got some
cutting up heaven like it's no big deal. Everybody else. Okay, but it's me that's crazy, not the whole rest of the world.
Some suggestions, some comments and questions
way
coming
to gather
in.
Yourself, buddy.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I've got a lot of practice.
Slice of anything except humble pie when he's wrong. Texts in a listener.
Thomas Scissorhands.
Thomas Scissorhands. That's pretty good, Dom. I gotta say, I gotta hand it to you. It would make sense if Edward Scissorhands called everything a slice because he's constantly slicing things up.
You can also have a slice, like it's been a slice, right? So you can have you can slice off a good time, but you can't slice off chocolate.
That's right.
Wow. Okay.
Can you slice off a good time? Is that something anyone's ever said?
It's been a slice?
Yeah, but they don't say the other thing.
Yeah, but the implication is we've sliced off a good time together.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. But there was one good time and we managed to get a piece of it. That's what the implication is.
That's what the implication is. Sure. Whatever
Not
you say.
Not a chip off the old block, a slice off the old block.
Whatever you say. Anyways, looking in.
Honestly, that's best for the children, texts in another listener. We don't want to expose them to Drance calling it a slice of chocolate.
Someone else texted in, I'm shocked Drance doesn't throw candy at the peasants below from the penthouse.
His palatial rooftop estate. Inaccessible to trick-or-treaters. Anyways, okay. We're not doing it. All right, go ahead.
Tyler texts in, I'm shocked Drance doesn't throw
candy. Lena just read that.
No! Man, I'm so bad at multitasking.
She sliced it before you did.
I'm glad it's not just me that you tune out sometimes. It's also Lena.
I'm sorry. Honestly, I'm just bad at reading. Like, when texts are coming in and people are saying funny stuff, I really struggle to do that and talk.
Famed writer, bad at reading.
Famed writer, bad at reading.
Famed writer. That might be a little much.
It's very kind.
Noted writer.
I've got a slice of fame.
There you go.
What were we talking about?
People are texting in the moan you made when I told you that Lena had just read it. We might need to clip that and hear it back because I kind of missed it.
I think I just said no.
It was Jamie's moan, not Thomas's moan.
Did I moan? Really?
Yes.
What did I do?
I'm about to clip it, so just bear with me while you read some slices.
Did I really do a moan when I told him that he...
I lost our minds at the...
I just thought I went, no!
No, it's
no,
not
before
you.
Before that.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. I was completely oblivious to that.
I'm very excited to
I'm
hear
very
this
excited to hear it. I'm very excited to hear it. My goodness.
As you guys know, I tuned out everything.
Yes, obviously. Okay.
Back to the matter.
We're going to try to do this. We're going to try to get things back on the rails here a little bit. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. If you've got non-slice, non-moan related texts, go ahead and send those in. From a little bit earlier in the show, and again, you know, you were talking about Pew Suter going up to play with Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland, bouncing up to the top six and, you know, immediately looking like Pew Suter, right? Which is to say doing a really good job of complimenting skilled players in the top six and obviously scoring two big goals for the team as well. And Tim texted in, to be honest, I've been disappointed it took this long to get Suter back up in the top six. Once Joshua is back, Suter should play with Miller and Besser. That's from Tim. And I think if you're Pew Suter, you got to feel like you've made a pretty compelling case to be a fixture in the top six. But there's a couple of countervailing problems for you, right? Issues that are going to conspire to maybe keep you out of the top six. One is obviously the center situation. Now we'll see if Atu Ratu comes up, right? But there's a center.
Or Neil Zaman.
Or Neil Zaman, sure. But, you know, there's going to be times, I think, where they're going to choose to play Pew Suter down the middle in the bottom of the lineup as a center. And then I think the other thing, of course, is, well, you signed Jake DeBrusque to a really big, significant long-term contract. I don't know that you're, you know, 10 games in. Yes, it's been a frustrating start for Jake DeBrusque. You've talked about his shot rate being way down, but that's very, very early at the start of a long-term commitment to all of a sudden be drawing up lineups with him out of the top six and Pew Suter in the top six. Now, we've seen Jake DeBrusque bounce around a little bit here, but I don't know if the best version of this team is going to include him in the bottom six. I think the best version, you still have a lot. They still have a lot of options to exhaust trying to figure out, you know, a way for him to fit and to complement some of your best players in the top six.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. I think where things get really interesting for me in terms of what we've seen from the Canucks lineup shuffles, not just today, but over the course of this entire season, Jamie, is so we've seen the JT Miller line change its composition numerous times, right? Open the year with Danton Heinen, right? Then we saw What do we see before DeBrusk went up there? Because there was that game in Florida, I think, that DeBrusk played on the third line.
I think it was Baines.
Baines, okay, yeah. Right. And then DeBrusk has been up there, and that they've sort of stuck with that, even if it hasn't like
it's
really
bounced
worked.
Around a little bit. But yeah, that's been a fixture since then, really.
Yeah. And then we had obviously a stretch with Pettersson, and Pettersson played with DeBrusk, and then he's played with Garland and Hoglander, and now we've seen Baines play with that group, and today it looks like Pew Suter is getting a look. We've also seen, of course, the Canucks tinker with the third line and the fourth line numerous times. Quinn Hughes and Hronek has been fixed.
Yeah.
And here's where it gets interesting to me. Soucy and Myers has been completely 100% fixed.
Yep.
All season long. Like, at no point have we seen anything different. I know we were sort of having this conversation in the previous segment, but isn't that surprising to you that the top four, now it makes sense that the top pair is something that they're not going to mess with, but isn't it surprising that the top four has been effectively like a cannot change fixture in the Canucks lineup?
Well, it's definitely surprising that the Soucy Myers pair has not been split up at any point. Now, I guess it makes a certain amount of sense when you think about when you start to go down the road of what are the other options, right? And of course, Forbort was unavailable for a chunk of games there as he left the team for personal reasons, right? So, I mean, one easy switch would obviously be going Forbort-Myers and then Soucy with either Desharnais or Juulsen. And I think we even saw Soucy Desharnais in the preseason, if I remember correctly. So they've obviously thought about that as an option. But then it's also tough because, well, Desharnais has been in and out of the lineup. Right. And it's not as if Desharnais' performance has justified a bigger role, right? Or more minutes. So it's the kind of thing where you see what the results they're getting with Soucy and Myers, and you know, how Soucy in particular has really struggled, I think, this year, and you think, okay, well, they gotta change it up. But then you start to get into the nuts and bolts of what would that look like and what are the other options, and there's no real obvious like, oh, just try this. Short of, and we still get suggestions about this, short of
splitting
up Hughes and Hronek, which, you know, for reasons we've outlined, doesn't seem like it's a realistic possibility.
Well, also, it's the one thing that this team has been able to, you know, we mentioned it, I think I said, and I think it got clipped and shared on Twitter, like, nothing about this team's games inspired much of anything in the first part of the year, with the exception of the top pair, right? I mean, yep. There is one sort of central engine that this club has where it's firing, you know, full throttle, all pistons go in through 10 games, and it's Hughes Hronek. Are you willing
to risk breaking that up?
Right, especially when that's what's spotting you all this margin for error that the Canucks have been able to lean on, even as they've run impurely from an injury standpoint, from an execution standpoint, through the first 10 games.
Well, and it gets back to kind of an old conversation, right, which is, how much can you get of that? How much can you preserve of that just off the back of Quinn Hughes? Right. Now, again, I don't like, as much as I have been curious about, okay, let's try splitting Hughes and Hronek up at certain points, it's not as if I love the thought of Hughes Myers as a pairing, right? Or Hughes and Desharnais or Hughes Juulsen at the top of your lineup. If there was another credible option, then I'd be much, much more interested in it. And, you know, let's try, let's see. Can Philip Hronek's puck moving really get better results from Carson Soucy, right? Like, I think Soucy Hronek is an interesting second pair to try. And as much as I do think Quinn Hughes can be a miracle worker on his own, you still got to trot out somebody else there alongside him. And I don't like the idea of those minutes going to any of the other options, right? Like, Myers Hughes has never really worked since they've been teammates. We haven't seen it for long stretches. And then Desharnais or Juulsen just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So it's one, yeah, there's reasons to keep those guys together, but I also don't really know what the other option for a Hughes partner is at this point that makes any sense.
Well, and that's a big part of it, right? The club's aspiration of potentially eventually having a deep enough forward or defensive group that you could play Hronek and Hughes separately is not realized at the moment. You know, with Tom Volander producing at a pretty high rate at BU, there's the chance that you're able to add him to the mix toward the balance or toward the
later
end of
the
season.
Yep.
Right? Begin his contract right away, and maybe he could be an option for you, especially if he looks ready. Now, it's a big ask, but when you're talking about a guy picked just outside the fringes of the top 10, you know, we've seen that profile of player make an immediate impact at the NHL level, and even in the NHL playoffs. I mean, obviously, Cale Makar is the most obvious example, and I'm not suggesting
yeah, let's not go there quite yet.
100% no, but you know, we've seen other sort of not lesser prospects, but more routine kind of prospect profile guys sign and immediately make an impact, in the NHL and potentially even in the NHL playoffs. Here's a more routine one, a guy drafted 14th overall in 2016, Charlie McAvoy.
Yeah.
Charlie McAvoy played 38 games for BU. Hey, sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
And played 6 games for the Bruins that very playoffs, right? After and played 4 games in the American League, too, after signing his entry-level deal. So there's a variety of different sort of permutations, ways that this can go, but the Canucks do at least have one dart throw, lotto ticket, in-house that they don't have to sort of worry about, but it's not a lotto ticket that arrives until much later in the season,
yes.
March, hopefully, from the perspective of Tom Volander, if BU is going to go, you know, deep into the college hockey playoffs.
And really, unless his development is tracking just off the charts and you're kind of overwhelmingly confident about what he's providing, I mean, we're talking post-trade deadline, right? Like, it's not as if you get to try it out and then go to plan B. That's your backup plan. That's your, like, hey, it's great if that hits, but you have to do everything else leading up to that as if it won't hit. You've got to go out and make the acquisition, and then, hey, if all of a sudden Tom Volander looks amazing, that's a great problem to have, but you can't count on it.
Totally. And well, yeah, it's not something, especially if you're a win-now team, which the Canucks very much should be, given the age of this core group and sort of where they're at. Yeah, I mean, I think put it this way. It's a high upside swing that maybe goes your way, but it's not necessarily sufficient for you to build a plan around. This team's going to need to add a defenseman. I think we all kind of are beginning. I think the club knew that anyway. But I think it's been thrown into stark relief by just how much difficulty the Canucks have had both defending the rush and moving the puck.
I think there was a thought before the season that, okay, they'll have to add a defenseman to kind of hit their ceiling and look really, really dangerous. But now it's almost turning more into they needed to add to a defenseman just to, like, for the interim, not just for the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't even want to say, like,
more like a Zadorov type deal than a Lindholm type deal.
Exactly, right? Like, we just need help now.
Yeah.
We also will need help come playoff time, but rather than it being like, okay, we're going to add a luxury finishing piece close to the deadline, it's like, no. You need something more foundational a little bit earlier in the season. A lot easier to pull off than, or to say than actually do and actually go out there and pull off, but that's how it feels right now. And this text comes in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line, unsigned. Do you think the team's view on Desharnais has changed? Hard for me to see them keeping him for the rest of the year, given out how many games he's already sat out. I don't think 10 games as a team, obviously he hasn't played all of those, is enough probably to dramatically change the organization's view and a guy they already viewed as a project, right? That's been the word associated with Vincent Desharnais since they signed him as a UFA, but at the same time, I don't know that we've seen really the steps forward, even in the, like, the baby steps forward that you would necessarily want to see out of a project. And one hallmark of Jim Rutherford is, okay, hey, you just signed a player to a contract. That doesn't mean they're exempt from trade talk, right? That doesn't mean you're committed to them. He's very willing if he thinks, you know what, this didn't pan out the way I wanted it to, or it's not panning out the way I wanted it to. He's very willing to move on in those circumstances.
Yeah, for sure. But I do think you need to give Desharnais time. I mean, at the end
of
the day,
it's
10 games.
Yeah.
It hasn't been, it's 10 games at an average of what, like 13, 14 minutes a night? I mean, we're an hour and a half into this experiment, it wouldn't be time to cut bait on it. And by the way, I think that's why you see Desharnais go back up with Brännström, even though Forbert, like, didn't have a poor game or anything against San Jose, is that you want to know what you have here, right? This team, the thing about a project is, yeah, it's going to take some work, but also the outcome could be really exciting, right? That they believe that if they can get Desharnais up to a certain level, that he can be a lot more for them than a $2 million depth defender who fans grumble about when he makes mistakes, right? And, I mean, there is evidence of that. You've maybe had to squint a little bit in some games this season to see it, but you can see it in moments. I mean, you can see the physical play. You can see the penalty killing. You can see the range. So, you know, I think the club was always going to give him at least until Christmas and not give him until Christmas and then cut bait, but give him until Christmas and then make a decision on whether or not they could lean on him. And what I think has probably come at them a little bit more quickly is an understanding that, okay, if we're going to do this, it can't be sort of we have a Susie Myers pair and then we have a Desharnais Forbert pair that's almost like a mirror image.
Yes.
Right? Like the more affordable mirror image of our shutdown pair. We actually need some puck moving and we need a puck mover to help insulate, you know, Desharnais and make this experiment go. And so that's part of the process. Like, what, how much do the Canucks have to change how they play, right, to accommodate this, to get a sense of where they're at with the experiment? And then obviously, how long do they give it before they're willing to pay, you know, the high price? Because we didn't talk about it, but the Timothy Liljegren trade.
Yeah.
Now, fans, I think Liljegren exists in that guy you've heard of tier, where fans are like, what? That's all he went for? What was it, like a third and a sixth and a Benning?
People in Toronto were like, hey, that's more than we were expecting. Because he's got term next year, right? He's $3 million next year?
People in Toronto had the right take. Wow. Unbelievably rare. Mm-hmm. But truly, that's what happened here. Liljegren's a $3 million third pair guy, right? Not big, right? Doesn't hit.
Not elite offensively.
Not
or
elite
anything.
Offensively. He was playing Sharks power play one, but there's not a lot of teams on whom he'd play power play one. So you end up in that bucket we often talk about where it's like, it's pretty hard to be a top four guy if you're not elite, elite, elite defensively. And Liljegren's good defensively. He's not elite, elite, elite defensively. That's a huge return for an inefficient guy with term who has that sort of those sort of profile limitations. If that's the price, like, Liljegren should have been like an Ethan Bear price,
mm-hmm.
you know, and 2 years ago he might have been, right? Like a problematic contract with a commitment on it, on and on.
In the flat cap era, it would have been very difficult.
It's a UFA deal too. He expires as a UFA. Like there's no team control beyond the two seasons. So even if you're right about him, the upside's limited, right? It's just like, if that's the cost of the upside swing trade, then that's huge inflation over the sorts of deals that this Canucks team has swung in the past, right? And that reflects just how sort of invested you're going to have to be if you're going to add a contributor on the back end.
All right, I'm not going to be able to run out the clock here. Let's dip back into Moangate from earlier in the segment.
Here's
a noise I made completely oblivious. Let's hear it.
This is Jamie having a slice of a good time.
So you can have you can slice off a good time. But you can't slice off chocolate. Wow, that was way weirder than I thought.
Why was it so sensual, Jamie?
You know what that is? That's me, like, coming to grips with my life, which is that I'm considering the absolute inanity of the slice of life conversation. That's what it is.
I'm gonna be in trouble if I say anything, so let's just end the show.
No, you've got another minute 30. You got to.
No, no, we don't. That's a lie. A minute 30. That's a bald-faced lie.
You can do a lot in a minute 30.
I'm very serious, but we need to ban that drop forever. Forever. I can't. I can't with that one. I can play it one more time.
That's the audio encapsulation of a slice of a good time.
Oh, man. Woohoo. That is some Jamie. This is a family program.
Not anymore.
Get it together, bro.
I hope not. The inbox is they agree with you. Delete that right now. Look, hey, you do enough hours of live radio, you make some truly baffling noises on the air, 100%. Apparently, and they get clipped and saved forever. That's part of the gig. I apologize to everyone for making you relive that one. We'll see if the drop ever gets broken out again on the show. But that's our show for today. It's Canucks game day tomorrow. We'll be on the air as always to set you up. Thanks for listening here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
So you can have a slice off a good time, but you can't slice off chocolate.